From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. Jeffrey Katzenberg ran the Disney studio when it made The Little Mermaid and The Lion King. He co-founded DreamWorks, and now he's launched Quibi, which lets you stream short shows on your phone. Quite a career, especially for a guy once trained as a card counter by some shady friends.
Literally 50 years ago, I was on a path as a very young man to be in the casino business, and look where it landed. Always gambling. Never stopped gambling. Just different stakes.
I've known Jeffrey Katzenberg for, well, a very long time. We bonded early in my career covering the business when he told me that I made him want to vomit. This week, I quiz him on Quibi and look back at our long acquaintance, which began with Roger Rabbit. And we remember the irreplaceable Matt Holzman, who created this show. But first on the news banter, what exactly is Bob Iger's job these days? Stay tuned. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my partner in banter, Matt Bellany, formerly of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So let's talk about Disney. I mean, everyone is very, very exposed to the horrors of this pandemic. But Disney, in all of its businesses with the theme parks, the cruise lines, the resorts, Disney has been really slammed. I've been kind of stunned just kind of watching this unfold. I mean, it is stunning, but there's also this very strange thing going on where, as you may recall, Bob Iger abruptly, in my opinion, and the opinion of all of my sources, resigned as CEO of Disney in the middle of February as the manure and the fan were truly colliding. He had already shut his park in Shanghai. I think it's intuitively obvious that he has very deep sources in China. He knows what's going on there. He could see what was probably going to happen. And now we read in this column by Ben Smith in the New York Times that he has effectively returned to control to running the company. And I don't know, there's been no announcement of that. They named Bob Chapek, the guy who runs the theme parks, who, by the way, still runs the theme parks, which are in the midst of this catastrophe. He is supposed to be CEO. Bob Iger said, I'm going to focus on content. And now we read this, you know, this kind of thing like, well, he's running the place. There's been nothing from Disney. And I'm just baffled by who is running the place right now. It's kind of an important thing.
Yeah, and Disney seemed to respond to that New York Times piece by announcing that Bob Chapek had been appointed to the board of directors, which was expected, but a lot of people said that that timing was probably moved up in a show of authority that Bob Chapek is the guy in charge. But I don't know why Disney wouldn't make some kind of announcement if Iger is indeed resuming control of the company. I think what is likely happening is probably the board went to him and said something like, hey man, when you resigned, the company was in a certain place. Now we need you to get involved. He does have decades of experience with this company. Bob Chapek is new in the job. So why not lean on someone like that to guide you through this unprecedented challenge to the company?
It's a way of kind of countering another narrative, which is that Bob Iger saw this coming and looked like he bailed at a very bad time after doing very well by the company, but the company did very, very, very well by him. And now by sort of putting it out there in this vague way that he's really effectively running the company, it's saying like, no, I didn't really run. I just kind of, you know, did a smooth transition that was long planned. And I have to say, I feel like some of the analysis on this is so credulous. Some of the people who are media observers and pontificators. I've never seen people give a company such a pass. I mean, I feel like they grew up with Mickey and Minnie or something, and they get a little mushy in the brain around Disney, not to be disrespectful.
Well, it's not just Disney. Bob Iger himself gets a pretty positive media coverage.
Wildly positive, yes.
But deservedly so in many respects for some of the acquisitions and the success that Disney has had over the years. But in this situation, it does appear that he left at a time when he had more information than the rest of the U.S. government, apparently, or at least what was being promulgated by the U.S. government. And the company is really challenged. And I think there may be an element of him assuring all the employees and the people who cover and watch the company closely that, yes, someone who they know and love is managing this very difficult time, because if he had not not been involved. You know, Bob Chapek is an unknown quantity to many people, including many of the employees, and they want some sense of stability and continuity right now.
As you know, there are massive furloughs going on. Nobody would say that I don't understand why it's necessary, but I will also note, as you know, Disney has a lot of debt because they decided to buy Fox. And so far, I don't know that they've gotten something out of Fox, which makes you say, well, that was worth a $70+ billion. I mean, they basically wrote off the entire film slate. They got rid of the top executives who ran Fox. So they got a lot of content, but it's not really clear how that's going to be deployed. I mean, maybe that's down the road and we'll all see it and get it. Because I admit, I was wrong about Marvel. I didn't get it. Now I obviously get it. But the Fox thing seems, and of course, they couldn't have foreseen a pandemic. So please, but it may be that it was a bridge too far to pay $70 billion plus and go take on the debt when, you know, we're sort of trying to push into the streaming space. And even without pandemic, there was so much going on.
Yes, you couldn't have foreseen a pandemic, but also I think it's very early to start evaluating the Fox acquisition, because if you look at the one bright spot on the Disney balance sheet right now, it is Disney Plus, and they've got to 50 million subscribers in a very fast time, 5 months. And I think some of that at least has to be attributed to the Simpsons catalog, to the Nat Geo properties, to the fact that Avatar and some of these other big Fox movies like Home Alone are now available on Disney Plus. So I think that a lot of these synergies are starting to work and will pan out. But the downside is they took on a lot of debt. They've had to, in the past couple of weeks, take on $13 billion in additional resources to pay off debt and keep operations going in the future. They say that they're not actually using a lot of that money now. They just want to have it. But the fact that they even went out to get this on the debt market is a sign that they are looking shaky at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, your points are well taken about the value of those, although you then say, well, could they have licensed that kind of content for much less money? I mean, these are questions that will be parsed over for a long time. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, former editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. Coming up after a short break, eternal optimist Jeffrey Katzenberg explains why Quibi is like Roger Rabbit. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Jeffrey Katzenberg is nothing if not determined. Yes, the world is contending with a pandemic, which certainly was not what he intended when he and Meg Whitman set the April 6th launch date for the Quibi streaming service. But that didn't stop them from going ahead with their offerings of short series designed to be watched on your phone. Quibi offers an eclectic array of shows delivered in episodes of 10 minutes or less. There's the drama Most Dangerous Game with Liam Hemsworth and Christoph Waltz.
I make possible man's innate desire to be challenged in a highly intense sport, hunting.
You'd want them to hunt me?
The reality show Chrissy's Court, in which a black-robed Chrissy Teigen lays down the law.
I'm fully naked under here. I think that's the hardest part about being a judge. It's so hot.
And Titus Burgess hosts Dishmantled, where contestants guess the ingredients of meals shot at them out of a cannon.
Let's get dishmantled!
Quibi is being offered free for 90 days, but eventually will cost $5 a month or $8 without ads. Even before pandemic times, there was plenty of skepticism in Hollywood about Quibi, but Katzenberg, a true salesman if ever there was one, raised $1.75 billion. That's a lot for a service with no proof of concept, no library, and not that much name recognition. But Jeffrey Katzenberg is, as you'll hear, no stranger to gambling. We spoke to him just days after Quibi came online. It'll still be months before we know if the streamer reaches the 20 million or so subscribers that analysts predict it needs to survive. It had 1.7 million downloads in its first week. Before I asked Katzenberg about Quibi, he indulged me by sharing some memories, starting at the very end of the 1980s when he was running the Disney Film Studio. I don't know if you remember, we met on the phone when you called me when I was long ago at the Daily News in the Valley, and this will date us. When you were making Roger Rabbit at Disney, and you didn't know me, but you called me and said, what are you doing to my movie? You told me that Premiere Magazine was going to write the real story about Roger Rabbit, and I didn't tell you that I had just been hired by Premiere Magazine, and that was my first assignment. And I thought, You know, Roger Rabbit was hair-raising for, no pun intended, but very difficult. You know, everybody thought you were nuts, and it was the Ishtar of animation. And I don't know, you have any memory of that that would be fun to share?
Well, just what you said. I mean, and by the way, apropos of, you know, what I'm doing today, I loved the project Roger Rabbit. More important than that, I so much believed in Bob Zemeckis and his vision for the movie and Steven Spielberg.
As your boss at the time did not. Michael Eisner was not a fan of Bob Zemeckis, as I have written.
Or the film. and it was a challenging production because just the technology was new. It went wildly over budget. The numbers in that day and age, even for a company like Disney, were really, really concerning, the level of risk in it. I'm sure you remember, Ken, we had one of the worst disastrous sneak previews of a movie I think I've ever been to. So, you know, which literally two-thirds of the theater got up and walked out about 20 minutes after the movie started. So, but it did not shake my conviction and belief in Bob and Steven. And, you know, it was one of those testing moments. You know, I didn't lose my optimism for what they were doing and ultimately delivered arguably one of the greatest movies, you know, innovative,
classic.
And innovative, unique. And so I don't know. Yes, I have fond memories, but as you know, Kim, it's always very blurry for me on the details.
Yeah, you don't look back. I know, yeah. Jeffrey.
I've always been so much more excited and interested about what's in front of me. You know, in the metaphor of life, I'm driving in a car and I'm doing probably close to 100 miles an hour and I have no rear view mirror and no side mirrors. So I can only see in front of me.
And he does that actually in his car, folks. I have seen this, so he's not
yes,
even
I actually,
kidding.
Yes, yes, I actually do drive 100 miles an hour and I don't look in the mirror. But so literally and metaphorically.
A thing that I know about you because I wrote a book that you were on the cover of is that in your youth, you worked for John Lindsay as the mayor, and there was a notion among his political allies to start gambling clubs in New York. And you were being trained to be a host of the club. And actually, you were taught to count cards and were sent to gamble in casinos by some interesting New York characters. I don't know, you got off of card counting, but you at one point, I think, were banned in various casinos because of your skills in this respect.
That is correct. I will not argue. It's a slight skew of the story, but you're in the ballpark enough that we can leave it at that and just say, yes, literally, 50 years ago, I was on a path as a very young man to be in the casino business, and look where it landed me. Always gambling, never stopped gambling. Different stakes.
And so then you, of course, went on. You've had this amazing career. You were obviously at Paramount and from there to Disney. I mean, whole books have been written about this, including one by me, and then DreamWorks, where you made amazing films. I think Shrek is my big recommend for parents during the pandemic because my daughter watched it so many times when she was little, and it's great for adults and kids. We'll just tout Shrek, even though you've driven past it 100 miles per hour now.
Well, remember, the most important thing there is ogres are like onions. They have layers.
They have layers. So this brings us to Quibi. I'll get to Quibi.
Yes, in the words of Donkey, are we there yet?
Slow but sure, me. All right. So obviously you were not trying to launch Quibi in the midst of a completely unforeseeable disaster like this. You know, there have been people saying, why now? Why didn't you wait?
Let me try and frame it for you. So 9 months ago, we picked April 6th for a very specific set of reasons in terms of just timings of other events and things that were going on, NCAA basketball, NBA playoffs, the Academy Awards, Super Bowl, all of these things were things that we looked at and landed on that April 6th date.
I mean, you didn't want too much noise around it, is what you're saying. You wanted a little space for it.
We wanted to be in the place where we would be the only noise.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We literally wanted to be before the summer movies come out, an optimal time in terms of the TV business. I mean, many, many reasons why we landed on that date. A month ago, it was clear that our world as we know it was certainly going to be upended. And Meg Whitman, my partner, we actually sat down and we spent a couple of hours on a whiteboard looking at the pros and cons of staying the course and sort of thought about, well, this was designed from the outset to be, we get up every day, we leave our home, we take a television set with us, our phone. And in the course of our day, we have all these in-between times, commuting, waiting online for Starbucks, etc. Now, suddenly, we actually are not leaving our homes. We're sheltered in place. Would that use case hold up? And our assessment was it actually would hold up very well. We all will and are having many, many in-between moments. I would make the argument maybe even more in-between moments. They're different. And we felt while they were different, they were no less valuable and that our audience would be there and available. So the big thing, though, that we thought would actually be a game changer for us and give us a better chance at this is we made the decision to make it free for 3 months. We couldn't be launching a new product, a new platform, and then asking people to pay for it at a moment in time in which there are just so many people, they don't even know whether they're going to have a paycheck.
Right. Well, you didn't want noise around the launch, though. And of course, this is the loudest damn thing that we've had in our lifetimes, I think. And it doesn't end. You know what I mean? It's horrible as 9/11 was. There was like a finite thing. And this thing's...
Yes, but so is Quibi. This is not a movie or a TV show that has an air date, comes out, and in a matter of days... succeeds or fail. It's a subscription platform. We are going to be measured in months and years, not in days and weeks, right. Which now goes to another thing, which has been tried, true, and tested for me for 45 years, which is I have never, ever been in a position where I had great content and it failed, ever. Maybe it didn't work the first day or the first week, but you've seen this for all your decades of reporting, Kim. When you have something that's really good, it really works.
Yeah, I mean, I would sort of say, I mean, thinking, I immediately went in my mind to DreamWorks, which ultimately, you know, it started out strong, but it had no library, which has been, you know, that's been the thing that is so true in Hollywood forever. If you no library makes it hard to sustain, but you're in a way trying to launch a studio with no library.
Yes, but not. That's not the way. And but I, again, and I don't want to be the least bit defensive about it. But in the end, Stephen and David and I ended up creating about $7 or $8 billion worth of value for investors over the course of those 20 years. Did it fulfill all of the promises that we made that day in the ballroom of the Peninsula Hotel that you were at?
Yes, I was.
In 1994? No, it did not. But we promised the sun, the moon, the stars, and every single thing in the galaxy,
yes,
because that's what we needed to do to get that business started.
Right.
Did we fulfill the greatest vision and dream of what we painted a picture for that day? You know, we did not, but it was a success and in varying degrees, but in the end, it worked. And so will Quibi. And so it's not about how we do in these first 3 months or 5 months or even 6 months. We need to get started. And we did. We got off to a solid start.
Well, I'm giving it away for 3 months does what? I mean, does it inflict harm, you know, that is going to be a big problem down the road? Or you think we got this?
No, no, because we are extremely well financed, as you know. We have a runway on this that takes us almost to the end of next year. And even in terms of our board and our key investors, it's a conversation we had with all of them, and nobody blinked at this, not even in the least.
Now, in terms of awareness with the noise, and even before the noise was really as noisy as it became, we had done some survey showing low awareness at the Hollywood Reporter. How do you combat the question of awareness?
Well, there are different measures of awareness out there. And so all I can say to you is, we opened 2 days ago. We actually had a very, 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 very healthy downloads, and then more importantly, conversion into trials. The only thing that matters to Quibi in the end is net paid subscribers. Well, guess what? We're not having any net paid subscribers for 90 days. So all of the noise that is going on about downloads and trials, while certainly indicative of people's level of interest, it's not yet material in a good way or a bad way for us. It's too soon for that.
You know, you lead me to the bigger question that has been in my mind, which is we've seen all of the media, you know, the ones who can jump into the streaming game, right? We have Disney Plus online. Now we're getting HBO Max. But I have wondered, is there proof of concept for any of this, given the way the wager is being made by these companies, such huge wagers? And, you know, Netflix came into the world. There were no competitors. They had plenty of time. They had ridiculous out of the gate success with House of Cards and Orange is the New Black. And as far as we know, they don't really make money. So what I'm wondering is this sort of a thing where everybody's gone completely mad and we don't know that any of it works really?
Well, it does work. So, you know, Netflix continues to do an amazing job and has credible content.
But they are burning money, as we know. They throw billions at content, and we don't really pays off in the end, right?
Listen, I don't know enough about their finances to be an expert on it, except I look at it as somebody who is a subscriber, and you know, I couldn't wait to see Tiger King, and I'm now halfway into season 3 of Ozark, and you know, they just keep doing it. So now I go to Disney Plus, and once again, just say they have proven themselves to be in a category of one. And these things are, it's not a zero-sum game. It's not like one guy wins and another guy loses or gal in this. It's not working that way. Do you actually think for a moment that HBO is actually going to go away?
I hope not, but I honestly don't think they've done it any favors.
There's no chance.
I feel like they've subsumed it in this thing.
Okay. I am more optimistic about it than you are. It's easy to throw stones at these things and to be skeptical and cynical. I'm not. And by the way, they've thrown all the stones at me right now as we're here. Like, there are more people that are writing my doom in this very moment that we're having this conversation. And it's not that I'm ignoring the risk and the challenges of what we're doing or that Meg is. We are seasoned business executives. She and I together got 80 years at this. We are focused on building a business that is sustainable and profitable, and ultimately, you know, we believe is going to be successful.
So you're trying to do a ton of programming to appeal to, you want younger people, but you're not, you're going across.
We're quite targeted though, Kim. Yes, it's an 18 to 44 year old demographic there. It's a millennial audience, but the bullseye for us is 25 to 35 years old. And that is where the vast majority of our programming is aimed.
You have drama, you have news, you have cooking, you have, you know, very, very eclectic mix of programming. Now, as you know, I'm going to ask about this. Some of the reviews have been harsh. How does the optimistic Jeffrey Katzenberg process those reviews?
Well, the content is so eclectic, and it is at the same time quite targeted. And I guess I would rhetorically say to you, of the reviews that you are reading, how many of them are written by 25 to 35 year old millennials?
I don't even know.
I'm pretty confident it's low single digits.
Okay.
So, you know, listen, I've always talked about the two things that matter most in Hollywood, the Academy Award and the Bank of America Award. Those are the two things that
I know which one you want more.
No, I want them both. Everybody wants them both. You know, when I moved here from New York, and I remember it as though it was yesterday. You know the hill on La Cienega when you drive up to Sunset, mm-hmm. How steep that hill is?
That's a steep hill.
Okay. Well, in the early 70s, when you drove a car up there, which I drove my Mustang up there, if you didn't keep your foot on the brake and the gas at the same time, you'd roll back into somebody else, right?
Right.
But I was stopped right at the top of the hill, and I looked up, and there were two billboards. One billboard on the right-hand side had an Oscar campaign. You know, for your consideration billboard, right? On the other was a billboard for beachfront property in Malibu. And I went, okay, there it is. There's the answer. This is the meaning of life here in Hollywood. You got to get both of those.
Right? And certainly
and so
you did.
Off we go. But ultimately, what I would say to you, when you say which one is more important, I will answer it my way. From the very beginning, I have always understood I work for the audience, and what they say is what goes. And the one thing that I have always sought out is feedback from our customers. By the way, what did we talk about? Roger Rabbit, that preview that day in that theater is the worst one I've ever been to, ever. Okay. I care about the audience. And right now, what I care most about is Are they entertained? That literally is the thing. And the thing I'm most excited about right now is for the first time after 3 years, I'm actually getting to hear from our customers. They're talking to us in amazing detail every moment of every day. There's a dashboard sitting in front, and as we're sitting here talking, I can look at this dashboard and see, oh my goodness, more than 50% of the time, people are turning their phones. And here's not a big surprise, but people watching Daily Essentials tend to watch them mostly in vertical. And the people that are watching the movies are mostly watching them in horizontal.
Yeah, you're getting a taste of that sweet, sweet Netflix data with a little extra for your verticals and horizontals. You know, I feel like we could do this for a while. But if this doesn't work out, Quibi, somehow, you know, we could do the Kim and Jeffrey show, or maybe it has to be the Jeffrey and Kim show. Just talk about years of crazy stories that we both went through together and separately in this community.
Well, we can do both. Quibi can be a success and we can do that.
Let's do
both.
They
are not mutually exclusive. Here's what you can do, Kim, is you can say, when Quibi is a success, you'll have a little bit more time and we can do this with a little more regularity.
Yes, I will do that. All right, I'm going to do this. Jeffrey Katzenberg you want to be founder or co-founder with Meg Whitman?
I want to be anything that makes you, your audience, my customers, my partner, Meg Whitman, happy. I don't care. Call me dog catcher.
Jeffrey Katzenberg is apparently everything but a dog catcher. Thank you so much, Jeffrey, for joining us.
Happy to do it. Thank you. And everybody, keep your health, keep safe, and there is a better day coming.
This week, we're remembering Matt Holzman, who personified KCRW. Matt not only created this show and saw to it that I became the host, but he was my original banter buddy. Here's part of our first ever banter from March 2009, when the economy was being clobbered by the last recession.
Finally, really sad news that there have been layoffs on Sesame Street. Some of the people on Sesame Street are going to be out on the street.
Is Elmo out on the street, Matt?
We haven't heard yet.
Because that can't be. I mean, Oscar already lives in a trash can, for God's sake.
Brother, can you spare a cookie?
You do that very well.
Thank you very much.
One week, Matt was away. I can't remember where. And we asked John Horn, then a film reporter at the LA Times, to fill in. Now, Matt knew and loved movies passionately, but despite inventing this show, he was no expert on the business, as he would have been the first to admit. In fact, he was the first to admit it. He listened to that banter with John Horn, and he fired himself. He refused to do the banter again, and John became my regular banter buddy until he moved on. Matt continued to produce the show, and, well, it wasn't always easy. Everyone who worked with Matt at KCRW loved him, but knew he could be an enormous handful. He loved an argument, maybe to make things better, or sometimes maybe just to argue. If I said beige, he'd say taupe. And if I said, okay, taupe, he'd say, explain why you said beige. He was exhausting but brilliant, and he was the embodiment of what makes KCRW so special to all its listeners. Matt died of cancer on Easter Sunday. All of us at KCRW are heartbroken. And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program, and Paul Smith mixed the show. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts on the KCRW app. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.